King Tommen himself has granted me, and we've all seen your paper, Nuncle, snapped Edwin Frey. Why don't you go wave it at the Blackfish for a change?
Storming the walls will be a bloody business, said Adam Marbrandt. I propose we wait for a moonless night and send a dozen big men across the river in a boat with muffled oars. They can scale the walls with ropes and grapnels and open the gates from the inside. I will lead them, if the council wishes.
Folly, declared the bastard Walter Rivers.
Sir Brendan is no man to be cozened by such tricks.
The Blackfish is the obstacle, agreed Edwin Frey. His helm bears a black trout on its crest that makes him easy to pick out from afar. I propose that we move our siege towers close, fill them full of bowmen, and feign an attack upon the gates. That will bring Sir Brendan to the battlements, crest and all. Let every archer smear his shafts with knight's oil and make that crest his mark. Once Sir Brendan dies, river run is ours.
Mine, piped Lord Emmond. Riveron is mine.
Lord Carl's birthmark darkened.
Will the knight's oil be your own contribution, Edwin? A mortal poison, I don't doubt.
The Blackfish deserves a nobler death, and I'm the man to give it to him.
Strongbow thumped his fist on the table.
I will challenge him to single combat. Mace or axe or longsword makes no matter. The old man will be my meat.
Why would he deign to accept your challenge, sir?
Asked Sir Fawley Preston.
What could he gain from such a duel? Will we lift the siege if he should win? I do not believe that. Nor will he. A single combat would accomplish nought.
I have known Brendan Tully since we were squires together, in service to Lord Derry,
said Norbert Vance, the blind lord of Etranta.
If it please my lords, let me go and speak with him, and try to make him understand the hopelessness of his position.
He understands it well enough, said Lord Piper.
He was a short, rotund, bow-legged man, with a bush of wild red hair, the father of one of Jamie's squires. The resemblance to the boy was unmistakable.
The man's not bloody stupid, Norbert. He has eyes and too much sense to yield to such as these.
He made a rude gesture in the direction of Edwin Frey and Walter Rivers. Edwin bristled.
If my Lord Piper means to imply...
I don't imply, Frey. I say what I mean straight out, like an honest man. What would you know of the ways of honest men? You're a treacherous, lying weasel, like all your kin. I sooner drink a pint of piss than take the word of any Frey.
He leaned across the table.
Where is Mark? Answer me that. What have you done with my son? He was a guest at your bloody wedding.
And our honored guest he shall remain, said Edwin, until you prove your loyalty to his grace, King Tommen.
5 knights and 20 men-at-arms went with Mark through the twins,
said Piper.
Are they your guests as well, Frey?
Some of the knights, perhaps. The others were served no more than they deserved. You do well to guard your traitor's tongue, Piper, unless you want your heir returned in pieces.
My father's counsels never went like this, Jamie thought, as Piper came lurching to his feet.
Say that with a sword in your hand, Frey,
the small man snarled.
Or do you only fight with smears of shit?
Edwin's pinched face went pale. Beside him, Walter Rivers rose.
Edwin is no man of the sword, but I am Piper. If you have any more remarks to make, come outside and make them.
This is a war council, not a war, Jamie reminded them. Sit down, the both of you. Neither man moved.
Now!
Walter Rivers seated himself. Lord Piper was not so easy to cow. He muttered a curse and strode from the tent. "Shall I send men after him to drag him back, my lord?" Sir Davin asked Jamie.
"Send Sir Ellen," urged Edwin Frey. "We only need his head."
Carl Vance turned to Jamie.
"Lord Piper spoke from grief. Mark is his firstborn son. Those knights who accompanied him to the twins were nephews and cousins all."
"Traitors and rebels all, you mean?" said Edwin Frey.
Jamie gave him a cold look. "The twins took up the young wolf's cause as well," he reminded the Freys. "Then you betrayed him. That makes you twice as treacherous as Piper." He enjoyed seeing Edwin's thin smile curdle up and die. "I have endured sufficient counsel for one day," he decided. "We're done. Siege your preparations, my lords. We attack at first light." The wind was blowing from the north as the lords filed from the tent. Jamie could smell the stink of the Frey encampments beyond the tumblestone. Across the water, Edmure Tully stood forlorn atop the tall grey gallows, with a rope around his neck. His aunt departed last, her husband at her heels.
"Lord Nephew,"
Emmon protested,
"this assault on my seat. You must not do this."
When he swallowed, the apple in his throat moved up and down.
"You must not. I forbid it."
He had been chewing sour leaf again. Pinkish froth glistened on his lips.
"The castle is mine. I have the parchment, signed by the king, by Little Tommen. I am the lawful lord of Riveron, and—"
"Not so long as Edmure Tully lives," said Lady Jenna. "He is soft of heart and soft of head, I know, but alive, the man is still a danger. What do you mean to do about that, Jamie?"
"It's the Blackfish who is a danger, not Edmure."
"Leave Edmure to me. Sir Lyle, Sir Ilin, attend me, if you would. It's time I paid a visit to those gallows."
The tumblestone was deeper and swifter than the Red Fork, and the nearest ford was leagues upstream. The ferry had just started across with Walder Rivers and Edwin Frey when Jamie and his men arrived at the river. As they awaited its return, Jamie told them what he wanted. Sir Ilion spat into the river. When the three of them stepped off the ferry on the north bank, a drunken camp follower offered to pleasure Strongbow with her mouth. "Here, pleasure my friend," Sir Lyle said, shoving her towards Sir Ilion. Laughing, the woman moved to kiss Payne on the lips, then saw his eyes and shrank away. The paths between the cook fires were raw brown mud, mixed with horse dung and torn up by hooves and boots alike. Everywhere Jamie saw the twin towers of House Frey displayed on shields and banners, blue on grey, along with the arms of lesser houses sworn to the crossing. The Heron of Erenford, the Pitchfork of Hague, Lord Charlton's three sprigs of mistletoe. The arrival of the Kingslayer did not go unnoticed. An old woman selling piglets from a basket stopped to stare at him. A knight with a half-familiar face went to one knee, and two men-at-arms, pissing in a ditch, turned and sprayed each other.
"Sir Jamie!"
someone called after him, but he strode on without turning. Around him he glimpsed the faces of men he'd done his best to kill in the Whispering Wood, where the Freys had fought beneath the direwolf banners of Rob Stark. His golden hand hung heavy at his side. Ryman Frey's great rectangular pavilion was the largest in the camp. Its grey canvas walls were made of sewn squares to resemble stonework, and its two peaks evoked the twins. Far from being indisposed, Sir Ryman was enjoying some entertainment. The sound of a woman's drunken laughter drifted from within the tent, mingled with the strains of a wood harp and a singer's voice. "I will deal with you later, sir," Jamie thought. Walder Rivers stood before his own modest tent, talking with two men-at-arms. His shield bore the arms of House Frey, with the colours reversed, and a red bend sinister across the towers. When the bastard saw Jamie, he frowned. "There's a cold, suspicious look, if ever I saw one. That one is more dangerous than any of his true-born brothers. The gallows had been raised 10 feet off the ground. Two spearmen were posted at the foot of the steps.
"You can't go up without Sir Ryman's leave,"
one told Jamie. "This says I can." Jamie tapped his sword hilt with a finger. "The question is, will I need to step over your corpse?" The spearmen moved aside. Atop the gallows, the Lord of Riveron stood staring at the trap beneath him. His feet were black and caked with mud, his legs bare. Edmure wore a soiled silken tunic striped in tulle red and blue, and a noose of hempen rope. At the sound of Jamie's footsteps, he raised his head and licked his dry, cracked lips.
"Kingslayer?"
The sight of Sir Ilion widened his eyes.
"Better a sword than a rope. Do it, Payne."
"Sir Ilion," said Jamie, "you heard Lord Tully. Do it." The silent knight gripped his great sword with both hands. Long and heavy it was, sharp as common steel could be. Edmure's cracked lips moved soundlessly. As Sir Ilion drew the blade back, he closed his eyes. The stroke had all Payne's weight behind it.
"No! Stop, no!"
Edwin Frey came panting into view.
"My father comes, fast as he can. Jamie, you must—"
"My lord would suit me better, Frey," said Jamie. "And you would do well to omit must from any speech directed at me." Sir Ryman came stumping up the gallows steps in company with a straw-haired slattern as drunk as he was. Her gown laced up the front, but someone had undone the laces to the navel, so her breasts were spilling out. They were large and heavy, with big brown nipples. On her head, a circlet of hammered bronze sat askew, graven, with runes and ringed with small black swords. When she saw Jamie, she laughed.
"Who in Seven Elves is this one?"
"The Lord Commander of the King's Guard," Jamie returned with cold courtesy. "I might ask the same of you, my lady."
"Lady? I'm no lady. I'm the Queen."
"My sister will be surprised to hear that."
"Lord Ryman crowned me his very self."
She gave a shake of her ample hips.
"I'm the Queen of Whores."
"No," Jamie thought. "My sweet sister holds that title, too." Sir Ryman found his tongue.
"Shut your mouth, slut. Lord Jamie doesn't want to hear some harlot's nonsense."
This Frey was a thick-set man with a broad face, small eyes, and a soft, fleshy set of chins. His breath stank of wine and onions. "Making queen, Sir Ryman?" Jamie asked softly. "Stupid. As stupid as this business with Lord Edmure."
"I gave the Blackfish warning. I told him Edmure would die unless the castle yielded. I had this gallows built to show them that Sir Ryman Frey does not make idle threats. At Seaguard, my son Walder did the same with Patrick Malister, and Lord Jason bent the knee. But the Blackfish is a cold man. He refused us, so—"
"You hang Lord Edmure," the man reddened.
"My Lord Grandfather, if we hang the man, we have no hostage, sir. Have you considered that?"
"Only a fool makes threats he's not prepared to carry out. If I were to threaten to hit you unless you shut your mouth, and you presume to speak, what do you think I'd do?"
"Sir, you do not under—"
Jamie hit him. It was a backhand blow delivered with his golden hand, but the force of it sent Sir Ryman stumbling backward into the arms of his whore. "You have a fat head, Sir Ryman, and a thick neck as well. Sir Ilion, how many strokes would it take to cut through that neck?" Sir Ilion laid a single finger against his nose. Jamie laughed. "An empty burst? I say three." Ryman Frey went to his knees.
"I have done nothing but drink and whore."
"I know."
"I am heir to the crossing. You can't—"
"I warned you about talking." Jamie watched the man turn white. A sot, a fool, and a craven. Lord Walder had best outlive this one, or the Freys are done.
"You are dismissed, sir." Dismissed? You heard me. Go away." "But where shall I go?"
To hell or home, as you prefer. See that you're not in camp when the sun comes up. You may take your queen of whores, but not that crown of hers. Jaime turned from Sir Ryman to his son. Edwin, I'm giving you your father's command. Try not to be so stupid as your sire.
That ought not to pose much difficulty, my lord.
Send word to Lord Walder. The crown requires all his prisoners. Jaime waved his golden hand. Sir Lyle, bring him. Edmure Tolly had collapsed face down on the scaffold when Sir Ilion's blade sheared the rope in two. A foot of hemp still dangled from the noose about his neck. Strongbore grabbed the end of it and pulled him to his feet.
A fish on a leash, he said, chortling. Here's a sight I never saw before.
The Frey stepped aside to let them pass. A crowd had gathered below the scaffold, including a dozen camp followers in various states of disarray. Jaime noticed one man holding up a wood harp. You, singer, come with me. The man doffed his hat.
As my lord commands.
No one said a word as they walked back to the ferry, with Sir Ryman's singer trailing after them. But as they shoved off from the river bank and made for the south side of the Tumblestone, Edmure Tully grabbed Jaime by the arm.
Why?
A Lannister pays his debts, he thought, and you're the only coin that's left to me. Consider it a wedding gift. Edmure stared at him with wary eyes.
A wedding gift?
I am told your wife is pretty. She'd have to be, for you to bed her while your sister and your king were being murdered.
I never knew.
Edmure licked his cracked lips.
There were fiddlers outside the bedchamber.
And Lady Roslyn was distracting you.
They made her do it. Lord Walder and the rest. Roslyn never wanted. She wept. But I thought it was...
The sight of your rampant manhood? Aye, that would make any woman weep, I'm sure.
She's carrying my child.
No, Jaime thought. That's your death she has growing in her belly. Back at his pavilion, he dismissed Strongbore and Sir Ilion, but not the singer. I may have need of a song shortly, he told the man. Lou, heat some bathwater for my guest. Pia, find him some clean clothing. Nothing with lions on it, if you please. Peck, wine for Lord Tully. Are you hungry, my lord? Edmure nodded, but his eyes were still suspicious. Jaime settled on a stool while Tully had his bath. The filth came off in grey clouds. Once you've eaten, my men will escort you to Riverrun. What happens after that is up to you.
What do you mean?
Your uncle is an old man. Valiant, yes, but the best part of his life is done. He has no bride to grieve for him, no children to defend. A good death is all the Blackfish can hope for. But you have years remaining, Edmure, and you are the rightful lord of House Tully, not him. Your uncle serves at your pleasure. The fate of Riverrun is in your hands. Edmure stared.
The fate of Riverrun?
Yield the castle and no man dies. Your small folk can go in peace or stay to serve Lord Emmon. Sir Brynden will be allowed to take the Black, along with as many of the garrison as chose to join him. You as well, if the wall appeals to you, or you may go to Castle Rock as my captive, and enjoy all the comforts and courtesy that befits a hostage of your rank. I'll send your wife to join you if you like. If her child is a boy, he will serve House Lannister as a page and a squire, and when he earns his knighthood, we'll bestow some lands upon him. Should Roslyn give you a daughter, I'll see her well dowered when she's old enough to wed. You yourself may even be granted parole once the war is done. All you need do is yield the castle. Edmure raised his hands from the tub and watched the water run between his fingers. And if I will not yield? Must you make me say the words? Pia was standing by the flap of the tent with her arms full of clothes.
His squires were listening as well, and the singer. Let them hear, Jamie thought. Let the world hear. It makes no matter. He forced himself to smile. You've seen our numbers, Edmure. You've seen the ladders, the towers, the trebuchets, the rams. If I speak the command, my cars will bridge your moat and break your gate. Hundreds will die. Most of them your own. Your former bannermen will make up the first wave of attackers, so you'll start your day by killing the fathers and brothers of men who died for you at the Twins. The second wave will be Freys. I have no lack of those. My westermen will follow when your archers are short of arrows and your knights so weary they can hardly lift their blades. When the castle falls, all those inside will be put to the sword. Your herds will be butchered. Your guards' wood will be felled. Your keeps and your towers will burn. I'll pull your walls down and divert the tumble stone over the ruins. By the time I'm done, no man will ever know that a castle once stood there. Jamie got to his feet. Your wife may whelp before that. You'll want your child, I expect. I'll send him to you when he's born, with a trebuchet. Silence followed his speech. Edmure sat in the bath. Pia clutched the clothing to her breasts. The singer tightened a string on his harp. Little Lou hollowed out a loaf of stale bread to make a trencher, pretending that he had not heard. With a trebuchet, Jamie thought. If his aunt had been there, would she still say Tyrion was Tywin's son? Edmure Tully finally found his voice. I could climb out of this tub and kill you where you stand, Kingslayer. You could try, Jamie waited. When Edmure made no move to rise, he said, I'll leave you to enjoy your food. Singer, play for our guests while he eats. You know the song, I trust. The one about the rain? Aye, my lord, I know it. Edmure seemed to see the man for the first time. No, not him. Get him away from me. Why? It's just a song, said Jamie. He cannot have that bad a voice.
Cersei. Grand Maester Pycelle had been old for as long as she had known him, but he seemed to have aged another 100 years in the past 3 nights. It took him an eternity to bend his creaking knee before her, and once he had, he could not rise again until Sir Osmond jerked him to his feet. Cersei studied him with displeasure. Lord Kyburn informs me that Lord Giles has cuffed his last. Yes, Your Grace, I did my best to ease his passing. Did you? The Queen turned to Lady Merryweather. I did say I wanted Rosby alive, did I not? You did, Your Grace. Sir Osmond, what is your recollection of the conversation?
You commanded Grand Maester Pycelle to save the man, Your Grace. We all heard.
Pycelle's mouth opened and closed.
Your Grace must know I did all that could be done for the poor man.
As you did for Joffrey, and his father, my beloved husband. Robert was as strong as any man in the Seven Kingdoms, yet you lost him to a boar. Oh, and let us not forget John Arryn. No doubt you would have killed Ned Stark as well, if I had let you keep him longer. Tell me, Maester, was it at the Citadel that you learned to wring your hands and make excuses?
Her voice made the old man flinch.
No man could have done more. Your Grace, I have always given leal service.
When you counseled King Ares to open his gates as my father's host approached, was that your notion of leal service?
That I misjudged. Was that good counsel? Your Grace must surely know.
What I know is that when my son was poisoned, you proved to be of less use than Moon Boy. What I know is that the crown has desperate need of gold, and our Lord Treasurer is dead.
The old fool seized upon that.
I shall draw up a list of men suitable to take Lord Giles's place upon the council.
A list?
Cersei was amused by his presumption. I can well imagine the sort of list you would provide me. Greybeards and grasping fools, and Garth the Gross. Her lips tightened.
You have been much in Lady Margaery's company of late.
Yes, yes, I... Queen Margaery has been most distraught about Sir Loras. I provide Her Grace with sleeping draughts and other sorts of potions.
No doubt. Tell me, was it our little queen who commanded you to kill Lord Giles?
Kill?
Grandmaster Bycelle's eyes grew as big as boiled eggs.
Your Grace cannot believe it. It was his cough. By all the gods, Her Grace would not... She bore Lord Giles no ill will. Why would Queen Margaery want him...
Dead?
Why to plant another rose on Tommen's council? Are you blind or bought? Rusby stood in her way, so she put him in his grave. With your connivance...
Your Grace, I swear to you, Lord Giles perished from his cough.
His mouth was quivering.
My loyalty has always been to the crown, to the realm, to House Lannister.
In that order? Pycelle's fear was palpable. He is ripe enough, time to squeeze the fruit and taste the juice. If you are as leal as you claim, why are you lying to me? Do not trouble to deny it. You began to dance attendance on Maid Margaery before Sir Loras went to Dragonstone, so spare me further fables about how you want only to console our good daughter in her grief. What brings you to the Maiden Vault so often? Not Margaery's vapid conversation, surely. Are you courting that pox-faced scepter of hers? Diddling little Lady Bulwer? Do you play the spy for her, informing on me to serve her plots?
I obey. Her maester takes an oath of service.
A grand maester swears to serve the realm.
Your Grace, she is the queen.
I am the queen.
I meant she is the king's wife, and
I know who she is. What I want to know is why she has need of you. Is my good daughter unwell?
Unwell?
The old man plucked at the thing he called a beard, that patch growth of thin white hair sprouting from the loose pink wattles under his chin.
Not unwell, Your Grace. Not as such. My oaths forbid me to divulge.
Your oaths will be a small comfort in the black cells, she warned him. I'll hear the truth, or you'll wear chains. Pycelle collapsed to his knees.
I beg you, I was your lord father's man, and a friend to you in the matter of Lord Arryn. I could not survive the dungeons, not again.
Why does Margaery send for you?
She desires, she...
Say it, he cringed.
Moon tea, he whispered. Moon tea for...
I know what moon tea is for. There it is. Very well. Get off those saggy knees and try to remember what it was to be a man. Pycelle struggled to rise, but took so long about it that she had to tell Osmond Kettleblack to give him another yank.
As to Lord Giles, no doubt our father above will judge him justly. He left no children? No children of his body, but there is a ward,
not of his blood. Cersei dismissed that annoyance with a flick of her hand. Giles knew of our dire need for gold. No doubt he told you of his wish to leave all his lands and wealth to Tommen. Rusby's gold would help refresh their coffers, and Rusby's lands and castle could be bestowed upon one of her own as a reward for leal service. Lord Walters, perhaps. Arryn had been hinting at his need for a seat. His lordship was only an empty honour without one. He had his eye on Dragonstone, Cersei knew. But there he aimed too high. Rusby would be more suitable to his birth and station.
Lord Giles loved his Grace with all his heart, Pycelle was saying, but his ward
will doubtless understand, once he hears you speak of Lord Giles's dying wish. Go, and see it done.
"'If it please, Your Grace.'
Grand Maester Pycelle almost tripped over his own robes in his haste to leave. Lady Merryweather closed the door behind him.
"'Moonti,' she said, as she turned back to the Queen. "'How foolish of her! Why would she do such a thing, take such a risk?'
The little queen has appetites that Tommen is yet too young to satisfy. That was always a danger when a grown woman was married to a child. Even more so with a widow. She may claim that Renly never touched her, but I will not believe it. Women only drank moon tea for one reason. Maidens had no need for it at all.
My son has been betrayed. Margery has a lover. That is high treason. "'Punishable by death!'
She could only hope that Mace Tyrell's prune-faced harridan of a mother lived long enough to see the trial. By insisting that Tommen and Margery be wed at once, Lady Olena had condemned her precious rose to a headsman's sword.
"'Jamie made off with Sir Ilion Payne. I suppose I shall need to find a new King's Justice to snick her head off.'
"'I'll do it!'
offered Osmond Kettleblack, with an easy grin.
"'Margery's got a pretty little neck. A good sharp sword will go right through it.'
"'It would,' said Taina. "'But there is a Tyrell army at Storm's End and another at Maidenpool. They have sharp swords as well.'
"'I am awash in roses. It was vexing. She still had need of Mace Tyrell, if not his daughter.' And at least until such time as Stannis is defeated, then I shan't need any of them. But how could she rid herself of the daughter without losing the father?
"'Treason is treason,' she said. "'But we must have proof, something more substantial than moon tea. If she is proved to be untrue, even her own lord father must condemn her, or her shame becomes his own.'
Kettleblack chewed on one end of his moustache.
"'We need to catch them during the deed.
How? Kyburn has eyes on her day and night. Her serving men take my coin and bring us only trifles. Yet no one has seen this lover.
The ears outside her door hear singing, laughter, gossip. Nothing of any use.
Marjorie is too shrewd to be caught so easily,' said Lady Merryweather. "'Her women are her castle walls. They sleep with her, dress her, pray with her, read with her, sew with her. When she is not hawking or riding, she is playing Come Into My Castle with little Alisane Bulwer. Whenever men are about, her scepter will be with her, or her cousins.'
"'She must rid herself of her hens sometime,' the queen insisted. A thought struck her.
"'Unless her ladies are part of it as well. Not all of them, perhaps, but some.
The cousins?'
Even Taina sounded doubtful.
"'All three are younger than the little queen, and more innocent.
Wantons clad in maiden's white. That only makes their sins more shocking. Their names will live in shame.'
Suddenly the queen could almost taste it.
"'Taina, your lord husband, is my justice here. The two of you must sup with me this very night.'
She wanted this done quickly before Margery took it in her little head to return to Highgarden, or sail to Dragonstone, to be with her wounded brother at death's door.
"'I shall command the cooks to roast a boar for us, and of course we must have some music to help with our digestion.'
Taina was very quick.
"'Music?'
"'Just so. Go and tell your lord husband and make arrangements for the singer,' Cersei urged. "'Sir Osmond, you may remain. We have much and more to discuss. I shall have need of Kyburn, too.'
Sad to say, the kitchens proved to have no wild boar on hand, and there was not time enough to send out hunters. Instead, the cooks butchered one of the castle sows, and served them ham studded with cloves and basted with honey and dried cherries. It was not what Cersei wanted, but she made do. Afterward they had baked apples with a sharp white cheese. Lady Taina savoured every bite. Not so Orton Merryweather, whose round face remained blotched and pale from broth to cheese. He drank heavily, and kept stealing glances at the singer. "A great pity about Lord Giles," Cersei said at last. "I dare say none of us will miss his coughing, though."
"No, no, I think not.
We shall have need of a Lord Treasurer. If the Vale were not so unsettled, I would bring back Peter Baelish, but I am minded to try Sir Harry's in the office. He can do no worse than Giles, and at least he does not cough."
"Sir Harry's is the King's hand," said Taena.
"Sir Harry's is a hostage, and feeble even at that. It is time that Tommen had a more forceful hand." Lord Orton lifted his gaze from his wine cup.
"Forceful, to be sure."
He hesitated. "Who, you, my lord? It is in your blood. Your grandsire took my own father's place as hand to Aerys. Replacing Tywin Lannister with Owen Merryweather had proved to be akin to replacing a destrier with a donkey, to be sure. But Owen had been an old dun man when Aerys raised him, amiable if ineffectual. His grandson was younger and, well, he has a strong wife. It was a pity Taena could not serve as hand. She was thrice the man her husband was, and far more amusing. She was also Meerish-born, and female, however, so Orton must needs suffice.
"I have no doubt that you will be more able than Sir Harry's."
"The contents of my chamber-pot are more able than Sir Harry's.
Will you consent to serve?"
Yes, of course. Your grace does me a great honour."
"A greater one than you deserve."
"You have served me ably as justiciar, my lord, and will continue to do so through these trying times ahead."
When she saw that Merryweather had grasped her meaning, the queen turned to smile at the singer.
"And you must be rewarded as well for all the sweet songs you have played for us whilst we ate. The gods have given you a gift."
The singer bowed.
"Your grace is kind to say so."
"Not kind," said Cersei, "merely truthful. Taena tells me that you are called the Blue Bard."
"I am, your grace."
The singer's boots were supple blue calfskin, his breeches fine blue wool. The tunic he wore was pale blue silk, slashed with shiny blue satin. He had even gone so far as to dye his hair blue, in the Tyrushi fashion. Long and curly, it fell to his shoulders and smelled as if it had been washed in rose water. From blue roses, no doubt. At least his teeth are white.
They were good teeth, not the least bit crooked.
"You have no other name?" A hint of pink suffused his cheeks.
"As a boy, I was called what? A fine name for a ploughboy, less fitting for a singer."
The Blue Bard's eyes were the same colour as Robert's. For that alone she hated him.
"It is easy to see why you are Lady Marjorie's favourite."
"Oh, Grace is kind. She says I'll give her pleasure."
"Oh, I'm certain of it.
Might I see your lute?"
"If it please your Grace."
Beneath the courtesy there was a faint hint of unease, but he handed her the lute all the same. One does not refuse the Queen's request. Cersei plucked a string and smiled at the sound.
"Sweet and sad as love. Tell me, what? The first time you took Marjorie to bed, was that before she wed my son or after?"
For a moment he did not seem to understand. When he did, his eyes grew large.
Your Grace has been misinformed. I swear to you I never—"
"Liar!"
Cersei smashed the lute across the singer's face so hard the painted wood exploded in shards and splinters.
"Lord Orton, summon my guards and take this creature to the dungeons."
Orton Merryweather's face was damp with fear.
"This, oh, infamy! He dared seduce the queen?"
"I fear it was the other way around, but he is a traitor all the same.
Let him sing for Lord Qyburn."
The Blue Bard went white.
"No!"
Blood dripped from his lip where the lute had torn it.
"Oh, never!"
When Merryweather seized him by the arm, he screamed,
"Mother, have mercy, no!"
"I am not your mother,"
Cersei told him.
Even in the black cells, all they got from him were denials, prayers, and pleas for mercy. Before long, blood was streaming down his chin from all his broken teeth, and he wet his dark blue breeches 3 times over. Yet still the man persisted in his lies. "Is it possible we have the wrong singer?" Cersei asked.
"Well, all things are possible, Your Grace. Have no fear. This man will confess before the night is done."
Down here in the dungeons, Qyburn wore rough-spun wool and blacksmith's leather apron. To the blue bard he said,
"I am sorry if the guards were rough with you. Their courtesies are sadly lacking."
His voice was kind, solicitous.
"All we want from you is the truth."
"I've told you the truth,"
the singer sobbed. Iron shackles held him hard against the cold stone wall.
"We know better."
Qyburn had a razor in his hand, its edge gleaming faintly in the torchlight. He cut away the blue bard's clothing until the man was naked, but for his high blue boots. The hair between his legs was brown. Cersei was amused to see.
"Tell us how you pleasure the little queen," she commanded.
"I never. I sang, was all I sang and played, her ladies will tell you. They were always with us, her cousins."
"How many of them did you have carnal knowledge of?"
"None of them. I'm just a singer, please."
Qyburn said,
"Your Grace, mayhaps this poor man only played for Margaery while she entertained other lovers."
"No, please, she never. I sang. I only sang."
Lord Qyburn ran a hand up the blue bard's chest.
"Does she take your nipples in her mouth during your love play?"
He took one between his thumb and forefinger and twisted.
"Some men enjoy that. Their nipples are as sensitive as a woman's."
The razor flashed. The singer shrieked. On his chest, a wet red eye, wet blood. Cersei felt ill. Part of her wanted to close her eyes, to turn away, to make it stop. But she was a queen, and this was treason.
Lord Tywin would not have turned away.
In the end, the blue bard told them his whole life, back to the first name day. His father had been a cooper, and Wat was raised to that trade. But as a boy he found he had more skill at making lutes than barrels. When he was 12, he ran away to join a troupe of musicians he had heard performing at a fair. He had wandered half the reach before coming to King's Landing in hopes of finding favour at court.
"Favour?" Qyburn chuckled. "Is that what women call it now? I fear you found too much of it, my friend, and from the wrong queen. The true one stands before you."
"Yes." Cersei blamed Margaery Tyrell for this. If not for her, Wat might have lived a long and fruitful life, singing his little songs and bedding pig girls and crofters' daughters. "Her scheming forces on me. She assailed me with her treachery." By dawn, the singer's high blue boots were full of blood, and he had told them how Margaery would fondle herself as she watched her cousins pleasuring him with their mouths. At other times he would sing for her, while she sated her lusts with other lovers. "Who were they?" the queen demanded. "And the wretched Wat named Sir Talla the Tall, Lambert Turnberry, Jalabar Zoe, the Redwyn twins, Osney Kettleblack, Hugh Clifton, and the Knight of Flowers." That displeased her. She dare not besmirch the name of the hero of Dragonstone. Besides, no one who knew Sir Loras would ever believe it. The Redwyns could not be a part of it either. Without the Arbor and its fleet, the realm could never hope to rid itself of this Urien Crow's Eye and his accursed Iron Men. "All you are doing is spitting up the names of men you saw about her chambers. We want the truth."
"The truth?"
Wat looked at her with the one blue eye that Qyburn had left him. Blood bubbled through the holes where his front teeth had been.
I might have misremembered."
"Horace and Hubber had no part of this, did they?"
"No," he admitted. "Not them."
"As for Sir Loras, I am certain Margaery took pains to hide what she was doing from her brother.
She did. I remember now. Once I had to hide under the bed when Sir Loras came to see her. He must never know, she said.
I prefer this song to the other. Leave the great lords out of it. That was for the best. The others, though? Sir Talad had been a hedge knight. Gelabar Zoe was an exile and a beggar. Clifton was the only one of the little queen's guardsmen. And Osney is the plum that makes the pudding.
I know you feel better for having told the truth. You will want to remember that when Marjorie comes to trial. If you were to start lying again...
I won't. I'll tell it true. And after...
You will be allowed to take the black. You have my word on that.
Cersei turned to Kyburn.
Say that his wounds are cleaned and dressed, and give him milk of the poppy for the pain.
Your grace is good.
Kyburn dropped the bloody razor into a pail of vinegar.
Marjorie may wonder where her bard has gone.
The singers come and go. They're infamous for it.
The climb up the dark stone steps from the black cells left Cersei feeling breathless.
I must rest.
Getting to the truth was wearisome work, and she dreaded what must follow.
I must be strong. What I must do, I do for Tommen and the realm.
It was a pity that Maggie the Frog was dead.
Piss on your prophecy, old woman. The little queen may be younger than I, but she has never been more beautiful, and soon she will be dead.
Lady Merryweather was waiting in her bedchamber. It was the black of night, closer to dawn than to dusk. Jocelyn and Dorcas were both asleep, but not Taina.
"Was it terrible?" she asked.
"You cannot know. I need to sleep, but fear to dream."
Taina stroked her hair.
"It was all for Tommen."
"It was, I know it was," Cersei shuddered. "Oh, my throat is raw. Be a sweet and pour me some wine."
"If it please you." "That is all that I desire."
Liar! She knew what Taina desired. So be it. If the woman was besotted with her, that would help ensure that she and her husband remain loyal. In a world so full of treachery, that was worth a few kisses. She is no worse than most men. At least there is no danger of her ever getting me with child. The wine helped, but not enough.
"I feel soiled," the queen complained, as she stood beside her window, cup in hand.
"A bath will set you right, my sweet."
Lady Merryweather woke Dorcas and Jocelyn and sent them for hot water. As the tub was filled, she helped the queen disrobe, undoing her laces with deft fingers and easing the gown off her shoulders. Then she slipped out of her own dress and let it puddle on the floor. The two of them shared the bath together, with Cersei lying back in Taina's arms.
"Tommen must be spared the worst of this," she told the Meerish woman. "Marjorie still takes him to the Sept every day, so they can ask the gods to heal her brother.
Sir Loras still clung to life, annoyingly.
He is fond of her cousins as well. It will go hard on him to lose them all."
"All three may not be guilty,"
suggested Lady Merryweather.
"Why, it might well be that one of them took no part, if she was shamed and sickened by the things she saw."
"She might be persuaded to bear witness against the others, yes. Very good. But which one is the innocent?"
"Allah, the shy one." "So she seems, but there is more of sly than shy in her. Leave her to me, my sweet."
"Gladly." Alone, the Blue Bard's confession would never suffice. Singers lied for their living, after all. Allah Tyrell would be of great help, if Taina could deliver her. "Sir Osney shall confess as well. The others must be made to understand that only through confession can they earn the king's forgiveness and the wall." Gelabar Zoe would find the truth attractive. About the rest she was less certain, but Kyburn was persuasive. Dawn was breaking over King's Landing when they climbed from the tub. The queen's skin was white and wrinkled from her long immersion.
"Stay with me," she told Taina. "I do not want to sleep alone."
She even said a prayer before she crawled beneath her coverlet,
beseeching the mother for sweet dreams. It proved a waste of breath. As ever, the guards were deaf. Circe dreamt that she was down in the black cells once again, only this time it was her chained to the wall in place of the singer. She was naked, and blood dripped from the tips of her breasts where the imp had torn off her nipples with his teeth.
"Please," she begged, "please, not my children, do not harm my children."
Tyrion only leered at her. He was naked too, covered with coarse hair that made him look more like a monkey than a man.
"You shall see them crowned," he said, "and you shall see them die."
Then he took her bleeding breast into his mouth and began to suck, and pain soared through her like a hot knife. She woke shuddering in Tyena's arms.
"A bad dream," she said weakly. "Did I scream? I'm sorry."
"Dreams turn to dust in light of day. Was it the dwarf again? Why does he frighten you so, this silly little man?"
"He is going to kill me. It was foreseen when I was 10. I wanted to know who I would marry, but she said..."
"She?
The Magi." The words came tumbling out of her. She could still hear Melara Heatherspoon insisting that if they never spoke about the prophecies, they would not come true. She was not so silent in the well, though. She screamed and shouted.
"Tyrion, the Zavalankar," she said. "Do you use that word in Myr? It's High Valyrian. It means little brother." She had asked Scepter Saranella about the word after Melara drowned.
Tyena took her hand and stroked it.
"This was a hateful woman, old and sick and ugly. You were young and beautiful, full of life and pride. She lived in Lannisport, you said, so she would have known of the dwarf and how he killed your lady mother. This creature dared not strike you because of who you were, so she sought to wound you with her viper's tongue."
Could it be? Circe wanted to believe it. "Melara died, though, just as she foretold. I never wed Prince Rhaegar, and Joffrey, the dwarf killed my son before my eyes."
"One son," said Lady Merryweather, "but you have another, sweet and strong, and no harm will ever come to him."
"Never, whilst I live."
Saying it helped her believe that it was so.
"Dreams turn to dust in the light of day, yes." Outside, the morning sun was shining through a haze of cloud.
Circe slipped out from under the blankets. "I will break my fast with the king this morning. I want to see my son. All I do for him." Tommen helped restore her to herself. He had never been more precious to her than he was that morning, chattering about his kittens as he dribbled honey onto a chunk of hot black bread fresh from the ovens.
"Sir Ponce caught a mouse," he told her, "but Lady Whiskers stole it from him."
"I was never so sweet and innocent," Circe thought. "How can he ever hope to rule in this cruel realm?" The mother in her wanted only to protect him. The queen in her knew he must grow harder, or the Iron Throne was certain to devour him.
"Sir Ponce must learn to defend his rights," she told him. "In this world, the weak are always the victims of the strong."
The king considered that, licking honey off his fingers.
"When Sir Loras comes back, I'm going to learn to fight with lance and sword and Morningstar, the same way he does."
"You will learn to fight," the queen promised, "but not from Sir Loras. He will not be coming back, Tommen."
"Marty says he will. We pray for him, we ask for the mother's mercy, and for the warrior to give him strength. Eleanor says this is Sir Loras's hardest battle."
She smoothed his hair back, the soft golden curls that reminded her so much of Joff. "Will you be spending the afternoon with your wife and her cousins?"
"Not today. She has to fast and purify herself," she said.
"Fast and purify? Oh, for Maiden's Day."
It had been years since Circe had been required to observe that particular holy day. Thrice wed, yet she would still have us believe she is a maid.
Demure in white, the little queen would lead her hens to Balor's sept to light tall white candles at the maiden's feet and hang parchment garlands about her holy neck. A few of her hens, at least. On Maiden's Day, widows, mothers, and whores alike were barred from the septs, along with men, lest they profane the sacred songs of innocence. Only virgin maids could...
Mother, did I say something wrong?
Cersei kissed her son's brow. You said something very wise, sweetling. Now run along and play with your kittens. Afterward, she summoned Sir Osney Kettleblack to her solar. He came in sweaty from the yard and swaggering, and as he took a knee, he undressed her with his eyes, the way he always did. Rise, sir, and sit here next to me. You did me a valiant service once, but now I have a harder task for you.
Aye, and I have something hard for you.
That must wait. She traced the scars lightly with the tips of her fingers. Do you recall the whore who gave these to you? I'll give her to you when you come back from the wall. Would you like that?
It's you I want.
That was the right answer. First you must confess your treason. A man's sin can poison his soul if left to fester. I know it must be hard for you to live with what you've done. It's past time that you rid yourself of your shame.
Shame?
Osney sounded baffled.
I told Osmond. Margery just teases. She never lets me do any more than...
It is chivalrous of you to protect her, Cersei broke in. But you are too good a knight to go on living with your crime. No, you must take yourself to the great sept of Balor this very night and speak with the High Septon. When a man's sins are so black, only his High Holiness himself can save him from hell's torments. Tell him how you bedded Margery and her cousins. Osney blinked.
What? The cousins, too?
Megha and Eleanor, she decided. Never Arla. That little detail will make the whole story more plausible. Arla would sit weeping and plead with the others to stop their sinning.
Just Megha and Eleanor. Or Margery, too.
Oh, Margery, most certainly. She was the one behind it all. She told him all she had in mind. As Osney listened, apprehension slowly spread across his face. When she finished, he said,
After you cut her head off, I want to take that kiss she never gave me.
You may take all the kisses you like.
And then the war?
For just a little while. Tommen is a forgiving king. Osney scratched at his scarred cheek.
Usually, if I lie about some woman, it's me saying how I never fucked them, and them saying how I did. It is. I never lied to no High Septon before. I think you go to some hell for that. One of the bad ones.
The queen was taken aback. The last thing she expected was piety from a Kettleblack. Are you refusing to obey me?
No.
Osney touched her golden hair.
The thing is, the best lies have some truth in them, to give them flavour, as it were. And you want me to go tell how I fucked a queen?
She almost slapped his face. Almost. But she had gone too far, and too much was at stake. All I do for Tommen. She turned her head and caught Sir Osney's hand with her own, kissing his fingers. They were rough and hard, calloused from the sword. Robert had hands like that, she thought. Cersei wrapped her arms around his neck. I would not want it said I made a liar of you, she whispered in a husky voice. Give me an hour, and meet me in my bedchamber.
We waited long enough.
He thrust his fingers inside the bodice of a gown and yanked, and the silk parted with a ripping sound so loud that Cersei was afraid that half of the Red Keep must have heard it.
Take off the rest, before I tear that too, he said. You can keep the crown on. I like you in the crown.
The princess in the tower. Hers was a gentle prison. Ariane took solace.